familiar story, so I don't have to read it slowly or anything like that. 1 Samuel chapter 17, and it's the story of David and Goliath. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soku in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Soku and Azek. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill, the Israelites another, with the valley in between them. I'll show you a picture of this just now, but you've got this valley with this little river in the middle, and on the one side you've got the Philistines, and the other side you've got the Israelites, the armies of Saul. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits, that's just under 9 feet. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. That's about 57 kilograms. On his legs he wore bronze greaves and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod and its iron point weighed the equivalent of 7 kilograms. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. If I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's word, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time he was very old. Jesse's 3 older sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, that's just really a long period of time, the Philistines came out every morning and every evening took his stand. Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to the camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of the unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines." Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of the shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, each facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of the supply, ran to the battle front lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking to them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give his daughter in marriage and exempt his family line from taxes in Israel." David asked those standing near, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Now what have I done?" asked David. "Can't I even speak?" That's a kid brother speaking. He turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are little more than a boy, and he has been a warrior from his youth." So his oldest brother kind of puts him down and makes him feel like he's nothing. King Saul puts him down and makes him feel like he's nothing. But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. when a lion or bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord rescued me from the paw of the lion, and the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic, put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened the sword over the tunic and tried to walk around because he was not used to it. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I'm not used to them." So he took them off. He took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch in his shepherd bag, with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine with his shield bearer in front of him kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome. And he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You have come against me with sword and spear and javelin. But I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. And this day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. He will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag, taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down to the ground. David triumphed over the Philistine with a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. A well-known story, and one that, what's a great story to continue what we are looking at as we look at We Are More Than Conquerors. Rich Mullins wrote a song, and I've spoken about this song before in one of the sermons that I preached. He wrote a song where he took the Apostles' Creed, the I Believe. He took the Apostles' Creed and he set it to music, and the words go like this: "I believe in God the Father, almighty maker of heaven, maker of earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, our Lord. He was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate. He was crucified and dead and buried." That was the first verse. And then he put a chorus to it. And that chorus has an amazing truth. "And I believe, what I believe is what makes me what I am. I did not make it." That's the truth that he believes. "I did not make it." No, the truth is making me. It's the very truth of God, not the invention of any man. What I believe makes me what I am. What I believe makes me what I am. Is it true that what we believe impacts on who we are? Is it true that my perspective on God determines how I live my life? Keep that in the back of your mind as we look at David. David knew God. David knew that God was sovereign, that he was all-powerful over everything. How did David know that? I mean, he was just a shepherd. But it was because he was a shepherd that he knew that. You see, David grew up in the hills surrounding Bethlehem, and he grew up with an awareness of God. He must have. I mean, who taught David the stuff he wrote about in the Psalms? Who took him aside and taught him about God? No one did. David's theology, what David believed about God, that theology developed as he lived with an awareness of creation, attributing greatness to the one who created it all. Which means that David could affirm, Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens through the praise of children and infants. You have established a stronghold against your enemies to silence the foe and the avenger. When I consider your heavens, you see, that's what he did. He considered the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you set in place. What are mere mortals that you are mindful of them, human beings that you even care for them? David, of course, he knew the stories about God. He knew about Abraham, about Isaac and Jacob. And so when David looked around and he saw the beauty and the majesty of creation, it wasn't hard. He came to this conclusion, God is very big. God is very powerful. God is worthy of our praise. And this understanding of who God is had practical implications for David. It meant that when a bear came for his sheep, David went after it, rescued his sheep, because this God, he believed, was with him. And when a lion came for his sheep, David wasn't intimidated. He went and rescued his sheep because what he believed made him who he is. What he believed made him who he is. Specifically, what he believed about God impacted on the way he lived his life. And so even when David's enemies were people rather than animals, David was able to say, Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, and the one who lifts up my head. I call to the Lord, and he answers me from his holy mountain. I lie down and sleep. I wake again, because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me. You see, because he believed that about God, didn't mean that the tens of thousands wouldn't assail him, didn't mean that he wouldn't be in difficult positions. But because of what he believed about God, it impacted on his attitude in that situation. What gave David his confidence? David had observed the greatness of God. David had put himself on the line and experienced the greatness of God. David's perspective was a perspective informed by the greatness of God. What I'm saying is that what Rich Mullins wrote is true. I believe what I believe makes me what I am. David believed his God was big and powerful and worthy of praise. And it's what David believed about God that made him the man he was. What David believed about God allowed him to face the inevitable challenges that came into his life. And he faced them differently from those who did not believe these things about God. And this is the David who wandered into the Elah Valley. As I've said, David grew up in the mountains and the valleys around Bethlehem. 20 kilometers to the west of Bethlehem, you find the Elah Valley. And on one side of the valley, we see the Philistine army. And we look across the valley, and on the other side, we see the Israelite army. And every day they have been coming and lining up like that for 40 days, as I said, for a long period of time. And listen to me, everyone in that valley, Israelites and Philistines, have had their perspective dominated by one reality. They have had their perspective dominated by one reality. Let's look at the perspective that was dominating, that reality that was dominating their perspective. Every now and again, nature produces a freak. I know the word freak is generally used with a negative connotations, but it could just be something unusual, unexpected. You know, it was a freak happening. People can be freaks in a positive sense. Michael Phelps, a name we recognize. A brilliant swimmer. A freak? Maybe. He's got size 14 feet. His feet bend 15 degrees more than most swimmers. His feet are virtual flippers. There can't be too many people like him around. Is he a freak? Well, not in the negative way we think about it, right? There are not too many people just under 3 meters tall. And yet, we read Goliath was one like that. Unusual, unexpected, a freak in that sense of the word. Also, freakishly powerful. His armor weighed 57 kilograms. Now, you carry 3 20-kilogram bags of dog food. His armor weighed that much. The blade of his spear weighed 7 kilograms, and he twiddled it as though it were a chopstick. He must have been a frightening man using frightening language. One word in particular, defy. That word means to treat with contempt, to insult, to taunt. It's a word used to ridicule, a word used to mock. And Goliath ends his speech, recorded in verses 8 to 10 like this. This day I defy the ranks of Israel. I defy you. Send me your champion. If he kills me, well, the Philistines will serve Israel. But if I kill your champion, Israel will serve the Philistines. Well, that sounds fair, doesn't it? Certainly more humane than thousands of people dying in battle. Strange thing was, everyone in the valley had their perspectives dominated by what they believed about Goliath. And it's strange because Philistines and Israelites alike, they all believed the same thing about Goliath. They all believed that Goliath was too powerful to lose. And because this is what the Philistines believed, they were triumphant. And because it's what the Israelites believed, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. The Goliath reality was dominating everybody's perspective. And it's into this valley, controlled by a Goliath-dominated perspective, that David wanders. But David doesn't just neutrally wander into this valley. David brings with him a different perspective. He brings with him his God-dominated perspective. David walks into that valley. He sees what the Philistines and the Israelites see. He sees, like them, two armies lined up on either side of the valley. And he starts asking what's going on. As David was talking to them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. And from his God-dominated perspective, David asked some questions. What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David's God-dominated perspective cannot believe what he hears. David's older brothers hear David saying these things, speaking from their Goliath-dominated perspective. They ridicule their kid brother. King Saul summons David. Also, from a Goliath-dominated perspective, he starts dealing with David. But David responds, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Can you hear the God-dominated perspective talking? Making a practical difference in David's life? Can you see how what I believe makes me what I am? Can you see how important sound theology, what I believe about God, can you see how important that is for Christians? Can you see why it is so important for Christians to attend a Bible study, to make sure that the preaching is biblical? What I believe makes me what I am. We need to make sure that what we believe is the truth about God, and also that we know it. David's God-dominated perspective says, I will fight this Philistine who defies the armies of the living God. Saul hesitates. David has a testimony. I have experienced God's strength in protecting my sheep from the marauding lion and bear. And so Saul relents. David shrugs off the armor and weapons of Saul and armed only with his shepherd's staff and a sling. But his mind dominated by his belief in and experience of the bigness of God, he wanders into the Elah Valley, a valley populated by those with a Goliath-dominated perspective. David wanders in, not neutrally as I've said, but bringing with him his God-dominated perspective. Now, I want you to use your imagination. I want you to try and get a picture in your mind. Philistines on the one side, buoyed by their Goliath-dominated perspective. We cannot lose. Israelites on the other side, pulled down by their Goliath-dominated perspective. We cannot win. Use your imagination. There's a stream flowing through the valley. David, armed with his shepherd's staff and a sling. Let me just explain something to you. I researched a bit about the sling as a weapon of warfare. It's a bona fide weapon. That stone could be accurately thrown at up to 200 kilometers an hour. Okay? And David armed only with a sling. But he needs stones. I want you to use your imagination. David walks into this valley. Armies on either side. He's looking for stones. What does he do? He kneels down, right? Yes, I know he's looking for stones. But picture the scene. Imagine the symbolism or what is being portrayed right there. A valley bristling with Goliath-dominated perspectives. And incongruously, David, with his God-dominated perspective, kneels down. Can you see it? Goliath is insulted. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he says, "I will give you flesh to the birds and wild animals." David responds, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All will know that the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." The words that need a God-dominated perspective. A perspective, may I say, that will not save us from needing to go to battle. A perspective that will not mean that our lives are suddenly made easier. A perspective, may I add hastily, that will not inevitably result in physical deliverance. But these are the words of one who knows he is more than a conqueror, because his perspective is dominated by God. And suddenly David is no longer kneeling. Suddenly he's running. He's running towards Goliath. He feels in his shepherd's pouch. He takes out a stone. He sets it in his sling. The sling goes round. And as they did in those days, he releases the stone underhand. And the stone shoots from the sling, reaches its terminal velocity of 200 kilometers per hour, finds the only vulnerable spot in Goliath, his forehead. And it's over almost before it's begun. You can read the closing details for yourself. We are more than conquerors. David was more than a conqueror. But for David to have had that God-dominated perspective, for David to have been able to be victorious in the valley of Elah over Goliath, that process started years before he met Goliath in the Elah Valley. That process started when David was on the hillsides outside of Bethlehem with the sheep. It began when David became aware of the greatness of God. It began when David started believing that his God was great, that his God was mighty, that his God was worthy of worship. It began when David started cultivating a God-dominated perspective. It began years ago when David started to live from this God-dominated perspective. David's meeting there, his ability to do so started years ago. We all want to be more than conquerors, and we are and can be, but we will never know that until we embrace the lifestyle of living with an awareness of the bigness of God. Do you know that you are more than a conqueror? Are you living your life today confident in God? If the answer is no, my question is this: what stands between you and a God-dominated perspective? What stands between you? Is it an overwhelming need to lie in bed that extra half hour in the morning instead of getting up to meet with God in your devotions? Is that what's standing between you and a God-dominated perspective? Is it doing things that you deem more important than coming out to a midweek Bible study meeting? Is that what's standing between you and a God-dominated perspective? Is being part of worship on a Sunday often taking second place to these other really important things in your life? I cannot answer that for you, but please answer the question: what stands between you and a God-dominated perspective? I want to tell you, I really don't like giving a list of things to do, because a God-dominated perspective doesn't come from ticking a list. Yes, I do these things. That's not going to do it. It comes from interacting with God's Word. It comes from being part of the people of God as you travel together onto spiritual maturity. But it will probably always involve embracing some of these practices. You see, millions of Christians in the last 2,000 years, their testimony, their life has shown that these have been part of their practices, not because they've ticked a box, but because they've had a desire to get to know God. And we cannot do that without involving ourselves in these practices. They've been able to face sometimes dreadful circumstances, knowing they are more than conquerors, because their lives have been given over to pursuing this relationship with God. What stands between you and a God-dominated perspective? I'm going to give some time for us to think about this, and if you feel that you want to talk about this, please, let's talk about it. I want to help you. Let's spend some time quietly thinking about it.